We are holding on Sanach Vav Amud Aleph, the third line. We're in the middle of the discussion of how do we know that we made it clear that the Baitusim are wrong in saying that the harvesting and bringing of the Omer and the beginning of Sfiras Omer are always going to be on Sunday. We know the halacha is that it's Mimachos Shabbos, means the day after the first day of Yom Tov, 16th of Nisan. So we went through so far several proofs for that. We had Rabbi Yechon ben Zakkai in his argument with the Baitusim about it, where he says, because there's one pasuk says Tisru Chamishim Yom, you should count 50 days, and the other one says Sheva Shabbos Tzmimus Tiyena, it should be 7 complete weeks. So one is implying just weeks without days, and the other one is implying weeks. One is implying days without weeks. The other one weeks without days. So it'll depend whether Pesach, whether the first day of the Omer is the beginning, whether the first day of Sfira is on the beginning, is at the beginning of the week or in the middle of it. And then we had a few other drashas from Rabbi Yezer, Rabbi Yeshua, Rabbi Shmuel, and Rabbi Yehuda ben Becerra. Then the Gemara had started bringing another Braisa, which started also bringing proofs for it. We had Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yehuda, and we had Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseda. Tosfos had said that either in the second Braisa it's just supposed to be Rabbi Yehuda plain, or there were two Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseda's. So now the Gemara continues. Rabbi Yossi, Omer. Rabbi Yossi says here's another proof that the Omer is brought and that Sfira Sa'ila begins on the day after on the second day of Pesach, on the 16th of Nisan. Rabbi Yossi, when it says Mimachos Shabbos, means Mimachos Yom Tov, means the day after Yom Tov. Now, after Omer, Mimachos Yom Tov, so you're saying that it means the day after Yom Tov, Eina Ela Mimachos Shabbos Bereishis, maybe it means the day after the weekly Shabbos, like the Baitusim claim. No, Amarta, you have to say, you can't. After all, the Pasuk doesn't say anything about it being the Shabbos during Pesach, which then that would unequivocally identify one particular Shabbos during the year. All it says is the day after Shabbos. The whole year is full of Shabbos. There are 50 odd Shabbos, 50 or more Shabbos in a year. So now you'd have to start going and figuring out which Shabbos it should be. And then there's no particular reason why you would say it would be one more than the other. So that's a strong proof that it must mean Dafka on the day after the first day of Pesach, on Tesadai Nisan, which is a defined thing, and it's that day and no other. For Oid, furthermore, Rabbi Yossi points out another proof. Nemer Shabbos v'mata v'nemer Shabbos v'mayla. We have over here where it says, the Torah says to count, after it says to count the 49 days of Sfiras HaOmer, it says that after that, Amimachos HaShabbos HaShviyas, until after the 7th Shabbos, you should count the 50 days, and then comes Shavuos, and you bring the Korban HaOmer, v'nemer Shabbos v'mayla, and you have the same word Shabbos as Amimachos HaShabbos. So, Malahalim, regular, Tchilas regal, again, this is similar to Rabbi Shmuel's proof that we learned yesterday in the first Braisa, just like when it comes to Shavuos, regal, it's Chilas regal, it's a Yom Tov itself, and the regal, the Yom Tov begins right after the seventh week is over. Afkan regal, Chilas regal, the same way the Omer itself has to be on a Yom Tov and at the beginning of the Yom Tov, so right after the first day of Yom Tov. And therefore, of necessity, it has to be the day after the first, therefore, of necessity, it has to be the 16th of Nisan. Shitim Kobetzis brings a different view, say, as well, that it's not just that it's a regal, but there's also a regal after it. Namely, in other words, that you have Shavuos, and then after it, you have more regal. He doesn't explain how, but I guess in the sense that you have the Yimei Tashlumin, like we learned about before, you have several extra days to bring your Korbanos, as opposed to, according to the Baitusim, if you're bringing it on the Sunday after Pesach, sometimes it could be that if Pesach itself comes out, if the first day of Pesach comes out on a Sunday, then the Omer, according to them, is going to be brought on the eighth day of Pesach, which there isn't even an eighth day of Pesach, it comes out, but it's not even on a Yom Tov, and there's certainly no Yom Tov after it. And even I guess if we say that regal achrav means the Yemei Tashlumin, then even if the seventh day Pesach comes out on Sunday, then you would also have, there's no Yemei Tashlumin after it. That's it. The seventh day is the last day you can bring your korbanos. So that's another proof, says Rabbi Yossi, to say.
Says that what applies to the Omer, which is very specific, applies to anything else.
Well, because we're saying that the Torah, Rabbi Yossi is pointing out that it equates them. He uses the word Shabbos in connection with the Omer and in connection with Shavuos. So once we understand by Shavuos that Mimachras or Shabbos or Shavuos means the, it means that Shavuos itself comes the day after the 49 days of counting are taking place, and that it's a Yom Tov itself, and it's the beginning of the Yom Tov, and according to Shitim Kubetzis, you even have more Yom Tov after it, so it has to be with the Omer as well, whereas according to the Baitos, then that wouldn't work. So therefore, okay. So that shows, that's another proof against the Beit Tosin, that it's not the day after Shabbos, it's the day after Pesach. Okay. So the Rabbi is bringing two proofs. The Gemara is going to point out further down on the Amud that Rabbi Yossi himself realizes that that his first proof, the fact that it says Mimachos or Shabbos, and if Shabbos just means the weekly Shabbos, we wouldn't know which one. The Gemara points out later on the Amud that Rabbi Yossi himself realizes there's a flaw in his proof, which is why he himself brings another one, which is more unassailable. The Gemara continues, Rabbi Shimon Elazar, right? Rabbi Shimon Elazar says here's a different proof. One pasuk says for 6 days you should eat matzahs, but then another pasuk says you should eat matzahs for 7 days. So what is it, 6 days or seven? Now Tosfos points out that elsewhere the Gemara learns from that what it means is, since the first pasuk says 6 days, implying you don't have to eat matzah on the seventh, meaning, in other words, exactly that it's optional to eat matzah on the seventh day, then we learn from that, and it teaches us throughout the entire Pesach, it is in fact optional to eat matzah, and you couldn't get it, you have to have lach and mishnah and Shabbos and Yom Tov, but that's a separate matter, but you don't have to really eat matzah the rest of the days, only on the first night. So Tosfos points out, so we're learning from that, but nevertheless, Rav Shimon Elazar is saying you can learn another point from it as well. Okay, sad, what is it? Is it 6 or 7 days? Matzah she'i'ata yachal o'ichl shiva min ha'chodesh, namely matzah, suppose that you made matzah from chodesh, from this year's new grain crop. And as we're going to learn over the next couple of blocks, you're not allowed to eat chodesh before the omer is brought. So if you make matzah from chodesh, you won't be able to eat it the first day. So you won't be able to eat it full 7 days after yochel oichel shisha min chodesh, but you're still able to eat it for 6 days when it's made from chodesh. Namely, in other words, so exactly that. The Omer is brought on the 16th of Nisan, which is the second day of Pesach. Suppose your matzah was made of chodesh, then you won't be able to have it the first day of Yom Tov, and the beginning of the second, you won't be able to have it the beginning of the second day until the Omer is brought, but the rest of that day, and the remaining 5 days of Yom Tov after that, so for a total of 6 days, you're going to be able to eat it. So that's what the Pesach is hinting to you. You have a 7 day Yom Tov, and sometimes you can have matzah, which you can eat all 7 days, namely if you make it from Yoshan, but if you make it from chodesh, you're going to have only 6 days to eat it. Now, again, that works only if we say that the Omer is brought on the second day of Pesach. If, like the Beit Tosfos, it can be brought on various days of Pesach, then that whole concept doesn't work out. So that's another proof. Next, the Gemara says, once we're darshaning, so then Rav Shimon Elazar continues to darshan the rest of the pasuk. The pasuk continues that he's counting from Mimachas HaShavas, Miyoyim HaViyachem. The pasuk says, from the day that you bring the Omer, to Miyoyim HaViyachem, from the day you bring Tisfru, you should start counting. Now, Yochol Yiktzer V'Yavi, you would think that what the pasuk means is maybe harvest the Omer, offer the Korban Omer, and then you don't right away start counting on the same day. But it's actually Yiktzer Yisper. Sometime after that, you can start counting. You don't have to have a certain day when you need to. Maybe that's what it means. No, Tamad Leimah. Therefore, the pasuk says, Mehochol Chemesh V'Koma, from when the sickle starts reaping the standing grain, Tochol Lisper, then you begin counting. So therefore, it means that as soon as, so right after you've started harvesting, now as we're going to learn in the next couple of Gathim, the Omer is the first grain that's supposed to be harvested. You're not even supposed to harvest grain before the Omer. We're going to talk about there can be differences in different places. If you have a place where you anyway can't bring the Omer from, but basically the idea is the Omer should be the first reaping, the first harvesting of the season of grain. So now the pasuk is saying from when the sickle touches the grain is when you should start counting, implying that after you've harvested the Omer, and before even you bring it, is when you should start counting. Which means also, as we're going to talk about soon, that it means that you count Sfiras Omer at night. So therefore, so that's the idea. When what you're counting it at night, namely you're actually starting from when the Omer is harvested, and not that you might start a couple of days later. But the Braisa continues, but if you're going to follow what the Pasuk is saying, and saying that as soon as the sickle has started reaping the grain, then meaning you harvest the barley for the Omer, so maybe it's the other way around, maybe now it means you have to harvest it on that night, 16th. And then you might as well start counting Sfiras HaOmer also on the night of the 16th. The Emes HaShiyur Tzayavi, but as far as bringing the Omer back, you could do later on. Maybe you would say that maybe you do it that way. Okay, we learned before, and we're going to learn on Amud Beis, that the Torah does say that the Omer is supposed to be caramel, which means as fresh as possible grain, which is why we learned you're supposed to bring it from as close as possible to your Yerushalayim, but we would say that's not an active B'di'evet. B'di'evet, you brought it when it was a little dried out, you'd still be Yotzah. So maybe the Pasuk is not saying, it's saying, Lachatchila, go ahead and bring it the day after you harvest it, so it's still fresh and full. But if you didn't, if you waited a couple of days, and it's a little shriveled, go ahead and bring it anyway. No, therefore the Pasuk says, from the day you bring the Omer. So that means the bringing is only valid on that one day, the 16th of Nisan. So all three things have to happen on that day. The harvesting of it at the night, the counting of the Omer also that same night, and the bringing it the next day. But the Braisa continues, still though, if you learn from the word miyom haviyachem, maybe all these three things happen by day. Maybe you harvest it and you bring it and you start counting Sfiras HaOmer by day. No, the Pasuk says it has to be seven full weeks. How would you have 7 full weeks? Keeping in mind that a Jewish day begins the night before, only if you start counting from the night before. So therefore, of necessity, Sfiras HaOmer has to begin by night, and since the Pasuk is saying that you start Sfiras HaOmer after the harvesting and before the bringing, then it means the harvesting also has to be that night. Still, Yochol Yichzer V'Yavi V'Yisfer Balayla. So maybe on the contrary, it means all three things happen by night. Maybe you bring the Korban Omer at night as well. No, Tamad Lamem Yom Aviyachem. Therefore, the pasuk says from the day that you bring. Hoketzad. So how does it come out? Ktsiro Sfira Balayla. So the harvesting and the beginning of Sfira Omer have to take place by night. V'Hava V'Yom, and the bringing of the Omer has to be done by day. By Sfiras HaOmer, since it says Sheva Shabbos HaTzmimus, so therefore that kind of overrides the fact that it says in the Pasuk Yom HaViyachem. The Pasuk says you should start counting from Yom HaViyachem, but that wouldn't mean by day, because again, the Pasuk is saying it has to be Tzmimus, and that means it has to be complete weeks. Okay. So that last part was not directly tied to the explanation of how we know that the Omer is brought on the 16th of Nisan, but just through a lot of Shimon Elazar, or maybe the Tana of the Braisa in general, took the opportunity to explain what the rest of the Pasuk means in terms of when the various mitzvahs take place. Okay, so now we've gone through two Braises that bring a variety of different explanations from different Tanoim of how we know that the Omer is in fact brought and Sfiras HaOmer begins on the 16th of Nisan and not on Sunday, as the Rabbi Joseph said, unless the 16th happens to come out on Sunday, obviously. So, Omer Rava, Kulu Islahu Pircha. So Rava says, you know, when you get down to it, most of these explanations, most of these proofs, actually you can slug them up somehow. Except for the last two Tanoim, Ben B'masnisa Kamaisa, Ben B'masnisa Basraisa, both in the first Braisa and in the second one, the Lesna Hupirfa, there's no way of slogging up their proofs. So in the first Braisa, we had five opinions. We had Rabbi Yechon and Zakkai, all of them agreed to the same point, but they all learned it in different ways. Rabbi Yechon and Zakkai, Rabbi Eliezer, Rabbi Yeshua, Rabbi Shmuel, and Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseira. And in the second Braisa, we had Rabbi Yossi ben Yehuda, Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseira, Rabbi Yossi, and Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar. So now, Rava points out, out of those eight Tanoim, we have four of the proofs are solid, and Rabbi Yossi himself had brought two proofs. So of those proofs, two of them from each Braisa are solid, but the rest of them you could actually slog up. So let's start with Idir Rabbi Yechim and Zakkai. We have Rabbi Yechim and Zakkai's proof that he used against the Beit Tosin, where he said because one pasuk says Tisku Hamishim Yom and the other says Sheva Shabbos Tzmimus, so one implies that you count only days and the other one implies you count only weeks. But you know, now he used that, and then and he bested them in the argument because of that. But in fact, says Rava, the fact is Dilma Kedab Baya. Maybe you can understand the difference between the two psukim the way Abaya explains it. Damar Abaya mitzvah l'minni yomim, mitzvah l'minni shavui. There is a mitzvah to count the individual days, and there's also a mitzvah to count the weeks. So therefore, the two psukim are talking about that. Namely, when we do Sfiras Omer, we do, for example, today is 7 days, which are 1 week of the Omer. So that way, we're doing both the days and the weeks. The Gemara is going to talk about further down on the Amud the different opinions of how to do it, but this is how we do it. This is how we do it in practice nowadays, of course. By the way, the post can point out that when we talk about counting the weeks, that may only mean when it's complete weeks. In other words, really, the Ikar Adin, once the Gemara establishes over here and then further down, that you have to count the days and the weeks. But that would only mean when you reach complete weeks. So you do. Today is 7 days, which are 1 week of the Omer. And later on, when you get to 14, today is 14 days, which are 2 weeks, etc. In the Ikar Adin, you wouldn't have to do in between. Let's say we do. Today is 8 days, which is 1 week and 1 day. In the Ikar Adin, you don't have to do that. But nevertheless, of course, the universal minhag is to do that anyway. So therefore, so you could say that, the difference between those two psukim is meant to teach us that din, and not necessarily meant to teach us that Sfiras HaOmer can sometimes consist of complete calendar weeks and other times not. Nonetheless, as Sfas Emes points out, it does still work. Rabbi Yechim and Zakkai's proof against the Baitosim was still valid, because after all, what would be a reason to, if we're going to say like the Baitosim that Sfiras HaOmer always begins on Sunday and each week ends on Shabbos, there'd be no point in having to count this X number of weeks. You know it's the end of a week because it's Shabbos. Only if Sfiras HaOmer begins sometimes in the middle of the week, does it become necessary to count at the end of each week to say, you know, even though today's Tuesday or today's Thursday or whatever it is, nonetheless, remember that now is the end of a complete week since we started counting Sfira. So all Rava is saying is you don't have a solid proof from there, but in fact it was a good proof, and Rabbi Yechim and Zakkai was able to use it. Rabbi Eliezer. What about Rabbi Eliezer's explanation that we learn it from the fact that it says Shiva Shavuos Tisva Loch, and he explained that Tisva Loch means the counting depends on Beis Din, and if it's Mimachas or Shabbos, means the day after Shabbos, it doesn't depend on Beis Din, because Shabbos is a weekly thing, and everybody knows what it is. If you're going to say, you can't say it, but, or Rabbi Yeshua, or Rabbi Yeshua's Drosha, where he said that we learn the same way as Rosh Chodesh takes place after a certain number of days, the same way Shavuos takes place after a certain number of days, and he said the same way as soon as the number of days of a month is finished, then we know right away when Rosh Chodesh is. The same way it has to be with Shavuos, that as soon as you finish the 49 days, immediately Shavuos has to come. And we talked about yesterday in Tosfos, there were several different explanations of what this means, including a different Girsa that he wasn't learning from Rosh Chodesh, but rather from Yovel. Anyway, either of those, Rava says, is not such a solid proof. Because after all of those presuppose that Mimachos Shabbos means the day after the first day Yom Tov. Fine. You can say it doesn't mean the weekly Shabbos, but Yomim Yom Tov Achron Koy. But maybe all of them mean, maybe both of those mean that you start counting Sfiras HaOmer from the day after the last day of Yom Tov. So you start counting this, so the first day of Sfiras HaOmer would be the 22nd of Nisan, which for us in Chutzal, it's Achron Shal Pesach, but in Eretz Yisrael, it's already Issu Chag. Maybe that's where that would still work with Rabbi Eliezer's or Rabbi Yeshua's Drasha. So the idea that we want to learn from there, that it must be the 16th of Nisan, it's not really such a solid, unassailable proof. On the other hand, Rabbi Shmuel's Drasha, that we learn from, that there's a similarity between the Omer and the Shtei Alechem, where Rabbi Shmuel had said that just like the Omer, just like the Shtei Alechem is brought at the beginning of a Yom Tov, so also the Omer is brought at the beginning of a Yom Tov. That's pretty unassailable. And Rabbi Huda ben Beseira's point that it says Shabbos in both places, it says by the Shtei Alechem and it says by the Omer. And again, both of them are the beginning of a Yom Tov, and the Yom Tov comes right after the previous thing mentioned. In the case of the Omer, right away after Mimachos Shabbos, and in the case of Shavuos, right after the 49 days. So those two, says Rava, less the Hupircha, there's no slogging those up. Those are solid proofs. Okay, so that takes care of the first Braisa. So in short, out of the five opinions in the first Braisa, three of them we could slug up their explanations, but two of them we can't. Now, Rava continues, now let's go to the second Braisa. You want to learn from Rabbi Yosef of Yehuda's proof that he said that Tisru Chamishim Yom means it always has to be 50 days, and if you're going to say that if you're going to say that the Omer is always brought on a Sunday after Pesach, and you're going to assume nevertheless that you start counting from immediately after Shabbos, then it's not necessarily going to be 50 days between Pesach and Shavuos, because it can be more depending on what day of the week Pesach fell on. Well, says Rava, that's not really such a solid proof. Fine, it means 50 besides for the 6, meaning we learned to Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda and said the maximum possible days of difference could be 6 days. If Pesach was the first day, Pesach was Monday, then for us the beginning, the harvesting of the Omer and the beginning of Sfira is on Tuesday, whereas according to the Beit Tosfim, actually would be actually 7 really. If the first day Pesach comes out Sunday and they have to delay it until the following Sunday, then you have a difference. We say you do it on Monday, then you have a difference of 6 days. Fine, maybe the pasuk means that you have, it's 50, but you may have, there may be extra days. There may be as many as 6 extra days before you actually start counting. So it's not necessarily a solid proof. What about Rabbi Yehuda ben Maseira's drasha in the first braisa, where he said, again, he had said, similar to Rabbi Eliezer in the first braisa, that the pasuk implies it's a counting that depends on Beis Din, and therefore that has to be counting from a yomtiv. But again, you could say, who says it means the first day of yomtiv, maybe it means Shri Shapesach, you start counting from after that, so no solid proof. Rabbi Yossi Nami, and as far as Rabbi Yossi's proof that he said it can't be a regular Shabbos because there are many Shabbosim during the year, that's not really such a solid proof, because you could still say Shetum Kovetz's ads, you could only, it points out, also Rabbi Yossi realizes that there is a way of schlugging that up also. Fine, granted, again, it means a Yom Tov, but it doesn't necessarily mean the first day of Yom Tov, it could mean the last day of Yom Tov. So he himself realizes that proof that we learn, because otherwise it could be any Shabbos during the year, or the Sfasemis points out, another point is, because you see it's obviously a Shabbos at the beginning of the harvest season, which necessarily ties it to Pesach. So fine, at least you would know, out of the 50 or more Shabbosim in a year, necessarily it has to be the one as close as possible to Pesach. But that wouldn't necessarily prove that it has to be the day after the first day Yom Tov, behind the Kamar. That is why Rabbi Yossi himself says, Va'oid, he brings another proof that it has to be at the beginning of a Yom Tov, which is similar to the proofs that we brought in, that Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Yehuda ben Maseira brought in the first Braisa, and that there's no schlugging up. So altogether, we're left with of the various proofs that we brought, then you have a few of them are not able to be schlugged up, and those are solid proofs against the Beit Tosfos. Okay. So fine. So that establishes that it takes place on that all these three things take place on the 16th of Nisan, and as we said, two of them take place by night, namely the harvesting and the counting of the Omer, and one of them takes place by day, namely the actual offering of the Korban Omer. Well, so the Gemara says Gufa. Okay, so now getting back to what we said before, Amar Abaya. So that Abaya says mitzvah l'mimni yomim or mitzvah l'mimni shavui. There is a mitzvah to count the days and separately also to count the weeks. So the Gemara says Rabbanan Devei Rav Ashi monu yomim or monu shavui. The Chachamim in the Yeshiva of Rav Ashi in fact did that and they counted both the days and the weeks. On the other hand, Ammeimar monu yomim v'lo monu shavui. On the other hand, Ammeimar counted only the days. He did not count the weeks. Omar, because he said zeichel hamikdashu, the whole counting of the Omer nowadays is only a zeichel mikdash, because we don't have a korban omer, and therefore that makes it you don't have to count the weeks as well. There is a big machlokas rishonim on the question is sfiras omer nowadays d'oraisa or d'rabbanan, and does that relate to this machlokas? So the Rambam in fact writes that the Rambam writes it is d'oraisa. The Rambam says it's a b'chol mokum b'chol zman, implying that it applies d'oraisa. Even the Rambam doesn't say straight out that it's d'oraisa nowadays, but he said it applies b'chol mokum b'chol zman, implying that it would apply d'oraisa even nowadays. So we'll cover the Tesef Mishnah.
And the Ma'ari Kurkus explained that basically the question is, that's the machlokus between Abaya and Amema over here. Abaya and the Chachamim of Rav Ashi's Yeshiva held that's Daraisa nowadays, and therefore you have to count the weeks as well. Amema held it's only the Rabbanon, and therefore you don't need to. So now the Rambam would be passing like Abaya and like Rav Ashi, in particular the Chachamim of Rav Ashi's Yeshiva are later than Amema. On the other hand, Rav Chaim Brisker explains that they all hold that it's Derabbanon, because they hold that the Kedusha of the Beis Mikdash disappeared after the Korban, whereas the Rambam holds consistently that the Kedusha of the Beis Mikdash is still present, which is why, for example, that you have the Halacha, that in principle you could bring Korbanos nowadays even though there's no Beis Mikdash, and therefore in keeping with that, the Rambam would say that it is Daraisa. So the Amoraim over here would be following an opinion that says that the Kedusha of the Beis Mikdash disappeared, and the Rambam would be following a different opinion that we also find and Shas that says that it's still present. So there's all that. Tosfos over here has a long discussion about a couple of different details in Sfiras Omer, and one thing is they point out that they say that it would be only Drabbanan nowadays. And the Ran also holds that way, and in Shulchan Aruch, and in Shulchan Aruch is passed in that way. So then the question is, if it's Drabbanan, still, do you still have to count the weeks as well, as we did when it's Daraisa, or do we not? And we're saying that Abaya and the Chachamim of Rav Ashi's Yeshiva held that you do, which is what we have to do nowadays. There's an interesting explanation also from Rabbeinu Yerucham and from the Ramah that they say that actually that he learns a Meimar means that when the Beis Mikdash is standing, you have a mitzvah daraisa to count days and weeks, and when it's not, then you count only days. So therefore, now he's saying that now the mitzvah nowadays, when there's no Beis Mikdash, is in fact only to count the days, because even though we're doing, in other words, we would say that the mitzvah does exist daraisa, but the detail about counting weeks is daraisa only when the Beis Mikdash is standing. Now, the Or Sameach has an interesting discussion about that, and he says the idea would be because we're saying we count up until we reach Shavuos. Shavuos itself is only one day, but you have more days of Tashlumin to bring the Korbanos of it. So therefore, that would imply, in other words, that the concept of Shavuos being tied to a week is only when there's Korbanos, and therefore, in keeping with that, then the counting of weeks for the Omer would also be, according to this opinion, according to Rabbeinu Yerucham, and the Ramah would be only when the Beis Mikdash is standing. Most of the poskim follow the opinion that is Drabbanan nowadays. One thing is, this is why after we count Sfiras Omer, we do make a bracha, and it's similar to make a bracha on other mitzvahs Drabbanan, but that is why, right after the counting, we say, because we're saying, now we just counted only Drabbanan, we want to be able to count Daraisa, we want there to be a Beis Mikdash, we want there to be a Korban Omer, and what we're doing will be Daraisa. So Tosfos discusses over here that first of all, that you could make the bracha even when it's only Sofik nightfall, because here it's only a Sfeika Drabbanan, so here we see clearly Tosfos says that it's Drabbanan. But nevertheless, Tosfos says, V'ein Nira, it doesn't seem proper, and in fact, in Shulchan Aruch it does say that you really shouldn't count before Tzeitzek Kachavim. You do have the suffix whether you can count from Shkia and on, which is why you have the famous halacha that if somebody asks you from Shkia and on what day of Sfira is it, you should tell them yesterday was such and such, because otherwise if you say today is such and such, then you may have been yotze to the mitzvah and later on you can't count for the bracha. Tosfos also gets into a discussion about the famous question about if you forgot to count by night, can you count by day? So the Halachas Gedolos, the Bahag, says that you could. But then Tosfos argues, and the idea is, the Bahag says, the same way as we're saying that you have to harvest the Omer by night, but nevertheless, b'diyevet, if you didn't, you could harvest it by day. We're going to talk about later on in our parak. Then that would mean the same way. If you didn't do Sfiras Omer by night, then you could do it by day. Tosfos, Rabbein Tam, and Tosfos disagrees with that and has a long discussion about it shouldn't be that way. So Lamaisa, this is why we count by night with a bracha, and if we count by day, then we count without a bracha. Based on that machlokas.
One more point. Tosfos says that if it brings from Halachos Gedolos, that if you missed one day, you wouldn't be able to count anymore with a bracha because you don't have Tumimus anymore. Here also, Tosfos says, Lo Yitochen, it's impossible to say that way. Nonetheless, you do have, the because of that opinion of the Bahad, is why we have the famous Halacha that if you did miss a whole day, an entire 24 hours, and didn't count, not by night with a bracha, not by day without a bracha, then you taka don't count the rest of the nights with a bracha because you have the opinion that it has to be Tumimus. The other opinion, Tosfos' opinion, is that each day is a mitzvah of its own, so this is why we have, this is how we have the halacha that we have nowadays, where if you forgot one night, if you at least you counted during the day with the bracha, then fine, we're able to be soimach on the Bahag's opinion that in that case you haven't lost a day, and then you can continue counting with a bracha, whereas if you miss both by night and by day, then you can't anymore. So all of that, all of those dinim come from this short piece of Gemara over here.
Why don't we use Tosfos' approach that even if you miss a day, since each
day is sacred? Well, we kind of do. What we say is, if at least you counted by day, so that way at least you didn't miss a day, then fine, you can continue counting with a bracha. But according to Tosfos themselves, if we followed Tosfos strictly, then say you can't count by day. If you didn't count by night, you wouldn't be able to count by day. However, you'd be able to count the next night because according to Tosfos, with missing one day doesn't affect the other one. So the Maisa, what we're doing is kind of a blend of the two different opinions. The fact is, you know, Suffolk bracha is so you get Suffolk brachas lahakol. If you have a Suffolk, whether you can make a bracha or not, you can't make the bracha because it might be a bracha lavatala, which is why we have to follow the opinions that if you miss an entire 24-hour day, then you can't count anymore with a bracha because of the Bahag's opinion that in that case you can't count anymore.
Why do we offer the Omer at night only?
We don't. We offer the Omer by day. We said we harvest it.
I mean, why do we cut it?
So the harvesting of the Omer, that's what we were saying before. We learned from the Pesukim that the harvesting of the Omer and the counting of the Omer have to begin at the same time. And since the counting of necessity has to be by night, so that it should be Sheva Shabbos Tznimis, that it's 7 complete weeks, because a complete day begins by night and continues with the day, then by the same token, the harvesting has to be done by night. So that's the thing. So you have, Tosfos points out, on the one hand, we have later on in our Perek, where it says that you could harvest it by day if need be. On the other hand, you have a Mishnah in Megillah that says any mitzvah that is kosher to be done by night can be done all night, and one of them is harvesting the Omer, implying that it can't be done by day. So the question is, which one of those do we follow? And that affects the question of whether if you harvest it by day, b'dieved it's kosher, and that also affects the question whether if you count Svidas Omer by day, b'dieved, have you been yotzeh? Let's go on. The Mishnah continues. Katsuru, now that they harvested the Omer, they harvested the 3 or 5 saw, according to the different opinions at the beginning of our Perek. So they harvested it. The Nasnuhu Bekupos, they put it in baskets, as we learned that each of the harvesters calls out to the people, am I putting it in this basket? And they do, and they bring it to the Azara. Heviul Azara, so now they bring the raw grain to the Azara, and they're going to do the rest of the processing over there. Now, the first thing is like this. We're saying that it's very fresh grain. The problem is you can't grind fresh grain in order to get good flour from it. So we have to dry it out. So first of all, the first thing is they would do is they would singe it in the fire. And it's singed in a fire to dry it out of it, Kedil Kaim Meir Mitzvah's Koli. In order to be Mekayim, the Pasuk says, in this week's parasha, it was actually yesterday's Chumash, says that the Minchas Bikurim, which is to say the Minchas Omer, has to be Kolori Ba'esh, it says, the Pasuk says, all the event has to be the fresh grain, Kolori Ba'esh, roasted in fire. So they would singe it and roast it in fire in order to accomplish that. Dibur Rav Meir, that's how Rav Meir says it. V'chum Omer, the Chum say no. What they would do is, first of all, they would do it differently. The first thing they do, say the Chachamim, is they would bang on the grains with sticks, with fresh sticks and with stalks of cabbage. The point is, in other words, what you have is like this. You have the barley grain or the barley grains, wheat grains also, come with several different layers that have to be removed in order to get clean flour. You have the bran and you have the wheat germ and whatever. So in order to be able to separate them, you have to dig The problem is that the problem is now, if it's dry grain, Rashi explains, then you can use a stick called a flail to bang on them and separate them. The problem is over here that the grain is very fresh and you don't want to crush it, and therefore you need to use softer things, so you still need to beat it for that purpose, but you need to use softer things for that purpose. So they would do that before they even singe it, before they even roast it. So according to the Meir, the first thing they do is roast it. But according to the Chamim, first you bang it with these soft sticks and things, Kadesh Leismayach, so that it doesn't get crushed. Not only crushing it would mean that it's not going to be caramel, it's not going to be fresh grain anymore, but Rabbeinu Gershom points out a practical thing. If you crush it, then you're not going to be so easily able to remove the shells of it. So you would do that first of all, the Chachamim say. Then the next thing is instead of just toasting it in fire, like Rav Meir says, they would put it specifically in an abuv, which is a metal keli that has holes in it, and then they would roast it in there. So the Rambam explains in Kiddush Mishnayos that Meir holds that kol ba'esh means that it has to be in the fire itself. So it has to actually be touching the fire, and therefore it means that you have to do it before you thresh it, before you start doing anything to remove it from its shells. It has to be while it's still in the stalks, you do that. And then what you have to do as far as removing the shells and then all that, you'll have to do after that. Whereas according to the Chachamim, it means it just has to be roasted, but the normal way of roasting things is usually in a keli. So therefore you can work to remove the shells and then peels and the different layers and things like that first. Another point, actually, the Keren Ora points out, since according to the Meir, first you're roasting it and therefore it's dried out. Now therefore you're able to beat it and to thresh it in the normal way like you would for any grain. Now this abuv, this metal, this copper keli had holes in it like a sieve. Kadesh Yehaya or show that the kolay, so that the fire is able to affect all of the grain. You want to have, in other words, again, the Chachamim are saying you do it in a keli, which is a normal way of roasting things, but you want to make sure all of it gets roasted well. So therefore you need to have a lot of holes in it. After that, shatchu ba'azara, they would take the grains and spread them out in the azara, va'aruach min ha'shevesvay, and the wind would blow on it. And that way it dries them off. And in particular, that means that now the moisture that got on them when you roasted them, moisture comes out of the grain kernel. Now that moisture dries up. Now we're ready. Now it's dried up enough, and now it's ready to be ground. The next thing is they put it into a grinding mill that's usually used by goroises, which are people who make split peas. The point is, Rashi says you want to grind it very coarsely. Soilus is actually a coarser grade of flour, as we'll learn later on in the Masechta. We're going to talk about, you have soilus, which is the coarser grade, more like semolina, and then you have kemach, which is the powdery flour, what we're more familiar with as flour. You want to have more soilus than in the case of barley. It's actually called geres, which is why you have in this parasha, you have the expression geres caramel. That's related to the word goroisis as well. So it means, in other words, that all we want is, Rashi explains, we don't want to grind it fully, because then we're going to end up grinding all of the shells and peels in it, and then we're going to need to sift them out, and we may not get all of them. So instead, what we want is we want to just grind it coarsely, so that way we can, that way we're not grinding up the shells, and that way it's easier, that way we're not grinding up the shells and the wheat germ and all of that, and we're able to get them off more easily. Actually, the Gemara in Pesachim explains, and another point as well, is that they would soak the grains in water, and that way also that helps separate the shells from the grains. So now, when you grind them, now you have that you're going to be able to get the semolina, the soilus, the geres grade separately, and you're not going to get too much of the kemach, of the powdery stuff, which you don't want, and you're not going to get too much of the bran or the wheat germ either. So you do that. And then, so now at this point, you've accomplished what the Torah says, that you want geres caramel. Geres is the same word as goroisis. So it means you grind it very coarsely. And that's how you do it. The one Mephoshim will point out that by other korbanos, in fact, we're going to learn later on in the Masechta that they would take the grains and they would beat them a lot, they would beat and punch them a lot in order to separate the shells from them. Whereas by the Omer they don't do that, and therefore we need to grind it more coarsely than the other ones. Okay, so now that they ground it, right? Siyum imenu isoren shumenupa b'shloch esri nafa. In the end, they got out of it one isoren, one tenth of an eifa, which, as we learned the other day, is we said that according to the different opinions at the beginning of our parak, you started with either three or five saw of grain. Three saw of grain would be ten esroinim. Five saw would be 16 esroinim and change. So now you sift out of it one isoren shumenupa b'shloch esri nafa, where you sifted it with 13 different sieves. So they sifted in finer sieves in order to get the cleanest geras flour. Rashi points out that in the next paragraph we're going to learn that what they would do is they would alternate back and forth between fine and coarse sieves. There's an interesting remez in the fact that there were 13 in Erev Levit, that his father points out that the Omer is brought from barley food, which, as we know, is Michael Behemah, is animal food. Behemah is gematria 52. Add to that some 13 siftings, you have 65, which is, first of all, the gematria of Shem Adnai, and second of all, it's also the initials, Samach Hei, 65, is the initials of Sfiras HaOmer. And in fact, it's brought in Kriyat Chaim that you should have in mind that name of Hashem and that gematria when you're making the bracha and counting the Omer. The Mishnah continues, Vashar. Now, what about the rest of the flour? So you've gotten one Isarin out of 10 or 16 Esaronim, means you have a lot of flour left which you can't use for the Omer, but it does belong to Hekdesh. So Niftes, you have to buy it back from Hekdesh. V'necha l'cholodam, that flour can now be eaten by anybody. Once you put it there, it doesn't have pyusha anymore. V'chayev b'chala, it will be chayev in chala, because chala, the requirement to take chala begins when it's made into dough. And by the time this flour is being made into dough, it no longer belongs to hekdesh, and therefore it's chayev in chala, or potter min ha-meiser. However, it is potter from meiser, because in part the earlier processing of the grain, when does grain or any produce become chayev b'meiser? Only when the processing of it is completed. In the case of grain, that last stage is called miruach. After you've done all the threshing and winnowing and all the other things that you need in order to get a pile of clean grain, you make a pile of it, you smooth out the edges of the pile, that's called miruach, and that's considered the official end of the processing of the grain. At that point, it becomes chayev in truma and meiser. Well, with this grain, at the point when they did miruach, it still belonged to hekdesh. Because after all, it's only after that they did the various processes that we said in order to clean the grain and get pure and remove all the shells and all those other external things and the bran and all that. So therefore, at that point, it still belonged to Hekdesh. Miruach took place when it belonged to Hekdesh. Therefore, it's potter from Meiser. On the other hand, Rabbi Akiva, Machala, Machala, over Meiser. Rabbi Akiva holds it is, in fact, Chayev, not only in Chala, but also in Meiser, for reasons that the Gemara is going to explain to us on our days. Okay. So the Gemara says, Tana Rabbanan, we learn in a Braisa. Let's analyze the pasuk. It's in this week's parasha that talks about the bringing of the Omer. The pasuk says like this: Ve'im takriv minchas bikurim l'Hashem. When you bring a first korban a bikurim korban to Hashem, Rashi points out on the pasuk, by the way, that im usually means if, but it doesn't mean if over here. The Omer is not optional; it means when. So when you bring the korban, the minchas bikurim to Hashem, how should it be? Oviv, fresh grain, kolui ba'esh, roasted in the fire, geres caramel, geres, which we said meant the good quality flour of caramel, of fresh grain, takli, this minchas bikurapa, you should offer this minchas bikurim of yours. So let's explain what these phrases mean. Oviv, ze oviv. The word oviv itself means exactly what it sounds like. Oviv, meaning, in other words, it has to be the first of the newly ripened and newly harvested grain. Oviv sometimes also means the spring, but it means, in other words, the spring is the season when the new grain is growing. So that's what it means. It has to be the newly grown and harvested grain. Kolui ba'esh, when it says it's roasted in fire, This means that the Jewish people would singe it in fire, as we said before. It means, in other words, according to the mayor, while it's still in the stalks, in order to accomplish the mitzvah of koli, in order to accomplish the mitzvah of roasting it. An interesting idea, one of the Mefarshim says, that all that we said, we learned before, that many people would gather to watch the Omer being harvested in order to make a big publicity against the Beit Tosim. So now they would continue and go to the Azara, and the individual people over there would each take a stalk and roast it, and that would be Mekayim the Mitzvah that way. So that only works according to the mayor, because according to the Chachamim, they're not going to stick around until all the processing has been done that we said before. The mayor says this is how they would do it. Just roasting it in fire itself is not what the Torah means when it says koli. The word koli implies that you have to be using something else for it. You have to be using a pavi for it. The Ravid explains, in other words, that koli implies that it should be something that's able to be done very easily. If you hold stalks over the fire to roast them, it's not so easy to do that. If you put them in the keli, in the abels that we mentioned in the Mishnah, then it's much easier to do it. And the word koli implies kal, something that's easy to do. So hokei san kolos, so what would that mean? How do you do it? Is as said in the Mishnah. Or different gusa, that Chichim Kuvetzes and the Yalkut Shimoni has, instead of Hokesa, Lishna Achrina, an alternate Loshan, is that we Daushin, Ein Loshan Koli, Ella Dover Acha Kolil. The word Koli means something easy, to means something Kolil. The word Kolil can either mean Kolol, which means a metal Keli, which would be this Abu that we're talking about, it would mean kolil, easy, as we're saying, it's easier to do it. Then according to that, then that's how we would do it. The Chum say Dafka has to be in that metal keli. So how do you do it? Abov shokloya soyasham. There was an abov of the type that are usually used by people who sell toasted grain. There was such a keli in the Azara. It had holes in it like a sieve. Kadesh teya ursha letas v'kuloi, so that the fire can have an effect on the entire thing. And that's how they would do it. Now, continues the Braisa, let's analyze the next few words in the Pasuk. Oviv Kolori Geras, if it only said Oviv Kolori without the word Ba'esh, in fire, and then it continued Geras, any idea, Im Oviv Kolori in Geras Kolori. What would it mean? Should you roast it while it's still Oviv, while it's still in the form of kernels, or should you wait until after it's made into Geras, until after it's ground? But since it says ba'esh, in between hifzik, that hifzik inyan, it breaks up the point, and therefore it means kolori refers to aviv, so it means while it's still aviv, while it's still in the form of grains, then you should roast it. So fine, according to the mayor, you're doing it when it's still in the stalks, according to the chum, you don't, but nevertheless, you still do it, you don't do it when it's in the stalks, but you do it when it's still in the form of grains. Yes. Next, what does the word caramel on the pasuk mean? We dash in rach v'mol. It means soft. It means soft and pliable and easily crushable. So it has to be that the grain is as fresh and soft as possible. V'cheinu omer, as we find in the pasuk, we find an expression where the word caramel is used in that sense, also meaning fresh grain. The pasuk describes in the times of Elisha. This is the first pasuk of the Haftorah of Parshas Tazria. The ish brought me Baal Shalisha. A man came from Baal Shalisha, a place in Eretz Yisrael. Vayobi the isha lekim lechem bikurim. He brought to the man of Hashem, to the Navi, he brought him lechem bikurim, fresh grain from the new crop. The esrim lechem sa'odim, and the pasuk actually doesn't say avod. Esrim lechem sa'odim, 20 loaves of barley bread. The caramel bit sikloinoi, and he also brought caramel in sikloinoi. And Elisha said, ten ma'omi echelu, give the people, give the talmidim over here, and let them eat it. And then the pasuk goes on to say that Elisha's Meshores asks, is this going to be enough food for all these people? And Elisha tells him yes, and Vayuchlu Vayisiru Kidvar Hashem, they ate and they even had enough left over, as Hashem had said. Now the simple meaning of B'tzikloinoi, different Mephoshim talk about it, means either the grain was still in its husks, or it means he brought it wrapped up in a cloth or something. But now the Gemara Darshan, the word B'tzikloinoi, but he came, the Yotzaklonu, and he poured it out for us, the Ochalnu, when we ate it, the Novahoya, and it was good quality bread, and we liked it. So the word Bitsiklonu is short for Ba Yotzak bo yotzak lonu and nove. So the oimer, and we have another example in a pasuk where we have several examples that Mar is going to bring of psukim where we see that we darshan a word in a pasuk as an etrikun, as an abbreviation. So another example. Pasuk from Mishlei describing how an Isha Zoyna convinces a young unsuspecting boy to come in and commit znus with her when he doesn't realize what he's getting himself into. So she says to him, Nis'al sabah havin, let us go and enjoy ourselves with love. So the word Nis'alsa, which is the simple meaning of let's enjoy ourselves and have fun, but the Nisa v'nitin, let's discuss it, v'nala, and we'll go up. V'nismach, and we'll be happy. V'nischate, and we'll enjoy ourselves. Ba'ahavim, with love. So Nis'alsa is short for nisa, v'niten, v'nala, v'nismach, v'nischate. V'oimer, and you have another pasuk. Knaf rinonim ne'elosa, a pasuk from Iyov that mentions the wing of the rinonim is happy. The simple meaning is, in other words, a bird that has a big bird that's happy in its strength and in everything. And again, we're going to douse in the word ne'elosa. Noise, it takes up its eggs. V'oila, and it goes up and flies up to its nest. V'nischate. And it puts down the egg into its nest, so it takes good care of its children. So the word nishalsa is so Rashi points out in the previous one we used the word vinishate to mean let's enjoy ourselves. Here we have the meaning vinishate means to lower it. Rashi points out that it has both meanings. The word nishate can mean to enjoy ourselves, like to be spoiled, like ben nishate lifnei aviv, a son who's spoiled by his father. On the other hand, can also mean lashon nishate v'yored, as in when the kohen daubs the blood of a korban on the corners of the mizbeach hazahav, and the word is mechate, which means to go down. So instead of just leaving the eggs on the ground, it goes and tenderly takes them up to its nest. Another example, v'oimer, another example of a pasuk that we darshan as a mitzvah. The pasuk is ki yorat taderech v'negi. When Bilam is confronted by the Malach on his way to curse the Jewish people, then the Malach tells Bilam, you know why I came and I stopped you? Ki yorat taderech v'negi. The simple meaning, Rashi explains it, I saw that you were in a rush to go and therefore I have to stop you. But the Gemara darshan, this unusual word yorat, yorasa, the animal was afraid of me, rasa, it saw me, notsa, and therefore it turned aside, and you hear you were beating it all those times because you didn't know what it was doing, but that's why. So Yorat is short for Yora, Rasa, and the test of Nasa. And another example, Dvei Rabbi Shmuel Tana, in the yeshiva of Rabbi Shmuel, they learned a brisa. Here's an example which is more directly related to our Sophia. Caramel, when the pasuk says that the grain for the Omer should be caramel, means caramole, and should be a full pillow. So the grain should be as soft and pillowy and full as possible, which is where we see, in other words, that it should be full, it should be fresh, you should bring it from as close as possible to your shalayim, and it also means, in other words, that it should be as well ripened as possible. It should be full, as it should be the fullest it was able to get while it was still attached to the ground. So now we've doused in the pasuk and we understand, therefore, the procedure of bringing the oimer.